God said in his word, he said, and what does the Lord require of you? And then the first thing that he listed, he said, what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, to act justly. And by the way, before I get into that, I want to say thank you to Rob. Rob, thank you so much. I've had a lot of comments. We spent some time on Sunday letting people make comments about the job that people did while I was away. So thank you for teaching last Wednesday night. And I want you to know that at least half of the comments about you were good. And they were at least half. No. And thank you for the time that you spent in preparation and thank you for taking care of my folks while I was away. All right. So tonight, as I finish this up, then I want to begin tonight. And Tom, I need your help. I need to know that you know that I love you, right?
Yeah.
You know that I love you. You know I love you.
Yes.
Now what just happened? I smacked him. Would you swear to that?
Yes, yeah,
would you testify to that in court?
Yes. Yeah.
Then you would be a false witness. Did you think I smacked him, Gabby? You did, didn't you? That's what it looked like. We are talking tonight. There's a commonly and then again, if I had really wanted to orchestrate this, I could have gotten somebody to help me and really kind of played that up, and it would have looked like I really smacked Tom. And most of you would have sworn that's what you saw. I mean, you would have sworn, you said, look, I saw it happen. And you might even be willing to go to court and say that, or you know, the court of Facebook or something like that, and say that. And so tonight we're talking about how easy it is for us to be wrong about some things, or how easy it is for other people to be wrong about some things. We're talking about two witnesses. There's a mistaught principle in 2 Corinthians chapter 13. It's where we're going to begin tonight, verse number 1. Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, and he says, this is the third time I am coming to you. In the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every word be established. So what we're talking about here, we're talking about justice, and we're talking about how we treat each other. We've been focusing mostly on the justice that's involved in how people treat one another, in particular, the way they talk about each other, accusations that are made about people. I'm not really getting into so much. You know, I'm not talking about O.J. Simpson kind of stuff. Okay, I'm not talking about there's something. You know, who's O.J. Simpson? So we got these young people. Never mind. But we're talking about how God wants us to be different from the world. God does not want us to. He does not want His children listening to junk about other people. He doesn't want His children listening to opinions and gossip and slander and those kind of things. He doesn't want us to be involved in that, but it's kind of one of those things, and we've been exploring this. It is so easy to get dragged into that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is so easy to get pulled in where somebody says, you know, listen, you know, Sherry, I need to talk to you about so-and-so. You know, I need to run something by you. And it comes oftentimes in ways like, well, you know, Sherry, we need to pray for so and so. Or, well, I'm not sure how to deal with this, Sherry. I need some advice. So let me tell you what this person did, and then you give me some advice on what to do. You know, and it's so hard sometimes to know, should I listen to this? Should I not listen to this? Should I offer an opinion? Should I get involved in this, or should I not? So this verse here. So now we're dealing tonight, we're moving on from what we talked about. We talked about what kind of witnesses people are, but now we're talking about this concept of, well, if two people say it, it must be true. You know, if there's two people who accuse this Supreme Court justice, well, then it must be true. If there's two people who say this same thing about this politician or this famous person or your neighbor, or somebody in church, or somebody in your family. And so I want to deal with this tonight. Now, where did Paul get this? Well, he got this out of the Old Testament, Deuteronomy chapter number 19, verse 15 says this, one witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity, or for any sin, or any sin that he sinneth. I always think this is, every time I read this verse, it's like, okay, God, we got it. It's like, Understood. I understand what you're talking about here. At the mouth of two witnesses or the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. Now, I've heard a lot of people say, well, look, it says right there, as long as there's two people who agree, it must be true. As long as there's two people who agree, we need to do something about this. You'd be surprised how many times that I or maybe our deacon board will have somebody come and say, you know, Pastor, there's something going on here, or this person's doing this, and it needs to be dealt with. And these are the kind of questions that we have to deal with often. So tonight I want to tell you some stories. I want to look at three Bible stories. I'm going to ask you just to let me just talk to you about three Bible stories tonight as we explore this concept of two witnesses. And does that mean that we should does justice allow then for a decision to be made? So if we go back, let me give you the first one here. Number one, 1 Kings chapter 21. What we find in 1 Kings chapter 21, Israel is in its death throes. For those of you who know Israel's history, there's the Israel side, there's the Judah side. There was a split in the days after Solomon, and there was a split. Israel was the northern kingdom, and they never really had a good king. But they've come to a point now, after hundreds of years of one bad king after another, the nation has drifted so far away from God that their doom has already been sealed. God has already sent prophets to say, you are going to be sold into captivity. They're actually they have what is considered to be probably the worst, most wicked king-queen duo of their history. Did you ever notice that nobody ever names their children Ahab or Jezebel? Have you ever known anybody to name their daughter Jezebel? Of course not. Because that's how bad these two people were. So let's get into this story here. So what we have here, Israel's in its death throes, and we have Ahab is the king. He has a neighbor whose name is Naboth, who has a vineyard, or what's basically a garden. And let's just pick it up here. He wants his garden. He said, Ahab spoke to Naboth saying, give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is near, next to my house. For it, I will give you a vineyard better than it. Or if it seems good to you, I will give you its worth in money. So Ahab comes to Naboth and he says, hey, you've got this great spot here right next to my house, right next to my palace. It's perfect for my garden. I'd really like to have it. He said, I'll tell you what, let's do a trade. I will give you one of my vineyards, one of my gardens that's better than yours, more fertile. It's probably it'll be more profitable for you. Or if you prefer, I'll write you a check. Name your price. I'll give you a fair price for it. So that's the story so far. Let's continue here. And verse number 3. But Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my fathers to you. So Naboth's response is that no, this has sentimental value to me. This was something that my father and my grandfather, and this came out of my family, so there's some sentimental attachment to that. Thank you for your offer, but I would rather not take that. Now, let me ask you a question. Was this so far in the story, has Ahab done anything wrong? No, he made him a reasonable offer, right? It's a reasonable offer. He said, hey, I'll give you a better vineyard than this. Let's just make a trade, or I'll give you money for it. His offer is reasonable, but Naboth said, you know, no thank you. Now, before we continue on with the story, I want to make the comment here as we're talking about this thing of people. People get upset with each other. Oftentimes, the conflicts in our lives begin something like this, don't they? It begins with a fairly innocent exchange. And when this is over, Naboth has said, hey, thank you, but no thank you. That wasn't a real sneeze. Yeah, that was like I stepped on a dog toy. So if you're going to interrupt me, do it better than that. As far as Naboth goes, this is probably just an exchange he had with Ahab. And as far as he's concerned, it's over, right? He's going back to his life. It's not a big deal to him. I mean, somebody made him an offer. He said, no, thank you. And he's going about his business. However, it is not over for Ahab. just like so many times in our lives, in our daily actions. Maybe two co-workers have an exchange of words, and one thinks it's over and the other doesn't. Maybe a husband and wife, they have a little thing there, and one of them goes away thinking it's over. It's usually the man, right? The man thinks it's over. Okay, you know, I asked her if there was anything wrong, and she said no. As far as we're concerned, right, Kirk? It's over. She said she's fine, but she's not fine. So you know, this is how, yeah, it's how she said that. So we have this thing. Now let's continue though and watch. Ahab's offer was perfectly reasonable. His response, however, is pretty pathetic. Notice in verse number 4. So Ahab went into his house sullen and displeased, because the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him, for he had said, I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers. And he lay down on his bed and turned away his face and would eat no food. Is that not the most pathetic? I mean, seriously, this is what happened. So his wife, Jezebel, comes in. She sees him pouting. She goes and she says, look, what is your problem? And he explains to her what happened. And Jezebel says, hey, and by the way, the only person who was worse than Ahab in Israel at this time was Jezebel. So she says, hey, don't worry about it. I'll take care of this. And notice, and she said, so Ahab is pouting. Jezebel says, I'll take care of this. So what does she do? Well, verse number 10. So she goes out and she said, now here's what I want. She got some of her servants. She set two men, sons of Belial, before him, before Naboth. She had Naboth brought out. She pretended she was going to honor him. And then she got these two men, sons of Belial. Do you might know what Belial means? The devil, yeah. And that was an expression in those days that basically meant these were pretty wicked people. Before him to bear witness against him. Oh, wait, now why does she have two? You had to have two, right? The Old Testament law was you've got to have two witnesses. One witness isn't enough. Two witnesses. So these two witnesses against him saying that he blasphemed God and the king. And then she said, and then I want you to carry him out and stone him that he may die. So this is the instruction Jezebel gives. She says, I want you two to say that you heard him blaspheme God and the king. And then I want you to take him out and I want you to stone him until he is dead. Now, what is really, you know, so what's really happening here? What we find here, you know, Jezebel decides instead of trying to buy the vineyard, or instead of trying to trade for it, she's going to take the easy and quickest route. All she has to do is find two people who will say anything she wants them to say. Right? That's all she's got to do. And it's not hard to find people who are willing to say whatever you want them to say. And so she goes out and she finds these two men, and they do, you know, just that. And here's what I want us to think about tonight. You know, I'm sure, and if we read the whole story, you'll find she felt perfectly justified in this. Do you know why? Because after all, her husband made a reasonable offer. I mean, he's the king. He could have just taken it. He could have just taken it if he wanted to. He was trying to do the right thing. Have you ever heard somebody say that? Look, I was just being nice. You were just trying to do the right thing. This is what she's saying to him. You know, you went about this the right way. He didn't respond. Naboth, you gave him a good offer and he didn't take it. So she felt perfectly justified in doing this. And she didn't have any trouble finding two witnesses to come and say that about him. Of course they did, and they did take Naboth out. And here's the point of this first story. We're going to move on to the second one. You know, when people have a vendetta, listen, when people have a vendetta, they almost always find a way to justify it. So listen, we need to be so careful and not be a part of that. We need to be so careful when we're listening to somebody's story, no matter how justified something may seem. But these men really didn't care. They basically just were willing to lie for her. Now, just so you know, this story does not end well for Ahab and Jezebel. Do you know how the story ends? Jezebel ends up getting thrown out of a window and the dogs eat her. It's kind of cool though, huh, kids? Kind of a cool story. it doesn't end well for them. And so understand, God is not mocked. Whatsoever man sows, that shall he also reap. All right, but that's the first story. Let me move on to the second story. So the second story now, we move to the New Testament. The New Testament, we find the church is on the move. Jesus has gone back to heaven, and Peter and the other apostles, they are building. The church is just going crazy. We had the great day of Pentecost where 3,000 people. The Bible says that people were being added to the church daily. When something wonderful is happening in the church, what do you think is maybe going to be the response from the dark side? It's not going to be good, right? Anytime good things are happening, there's going to be, look, when a church is growing, when a family's growing, when people are getting together, when there's something good happening, there's always going to be the other side of that coin where somebody wants to stop that. And so this is what's happening in the church. And we come to this place in the book of Acts where not only is the church going well, but there are people that are growing. I mean, people have come to become a part of, they've learned this new concept that Jesus was teaching, this crazy idea of basing your relationship with your fellow man on something called love. Crazy, radical idea. You know, love God and love your neighbor. And this idea was really taking off and people were growing. There was a young man named Stephen who was just on fire for God, and God was using him in amazing ways. Watch this in Acts chapter number 6, verse number 8. And Stephen, full of faith and power, did great wonders and miracles among the people. Now that's very unusual because in that time, although there were miracles that God was allowing certain people to do in order to give credibility to the upstart church, that was usually the apostles, right? The apostles were given that power. God said, I'm going to give that power to the apostles. But Stephen wasn't one of the apostles. So Stephen was an exceptional young man that had come in. He had become a follower of Jesus Christ. He was growing and he was having influence. And so can I just tell you, even from my experiences, I have watched people come into New Hope. I've watched some of our men and women who've come in and God's made such a change in their life. Maybe they came to the Lord for the first time and realized, hey, this is something totally different than what I'm accustomed to. And God began to work in and work through them and they began to have influence. Guess what happens? Well, you get the attention. You get the attention of Satan also. And so we have this, new levels, new devils. And so this is what's about to happen. Now, where's it going to come from? Watch verse number 9. Then there arose certain of the synagogue, which is called the synagogue of the Libertines, the Cyrenians, the Alexandrians, and of them of Cilicia and Asia, disputing with Stephen. So watch, they were arguing with him. So Stephen was this guy that he was so excited about this new thing that Jesus had taught, this concept that Jesus had taught, and he was teaching it, and he was sharing it all over the place. And so they began to argue with him about it. But watch verse 10. And they were not able to resist the wisdom and the spirit by which he spake. Now, let's take a time out. There's a certain thing that happens in human nature when you are no longer able to stand with somebody or debate with somebody in the facts of an argument, then what has to happen? When you cannot challenge someone's ideas, you cannot challenge someone's philosophies, you can't challenge somebody on their understanding of Scripture, then it has to become personal. And isn't that how human nature is? You know, when you get to the point, you know, and I know none of you have, but you probably know somebody who has been in an argument and they get to the point where they realize they're wrong. Like, you're battling it out, you're arguing it out, you're debating it out. It's like, oh, crap. And then what happens? Well, you're just stupid. You act like your mother. Something like that. It gets personal then, right? Wow, there's a whole bunch of you looked at each other when I said that. About time to have a couples retreat maybe here in a couple months. So, but see, that's what happens a lot of times. You know, I think that's what people resort to base language when they cannot make their point with intelligent words. When you can't make an intellectual point, they resort to a lower, much more base area. But see, that's kind of what's happening here. So they could not argue with him. And so they were wanting to debate everything with him. Let's look at verse number 11. Notice, then they suborned men. Now I want to draw your attention to that word suborned. Notice it's a prefix sub, which means under. That word literally means to throw under. Kind of like we use the expression throw somebody under the bus, right? And what are we doing there? Well, we're using them. Basically casting them away. It says they suborned men. This word also means to train privately. So listen, here's the connotation. They got a couple of men and they said, look, we need to speak to you privately. If there is one thing that I just dread, I'm being honest with you. I dread when somebody comes to me and says, Pastor, I need to speak to you privately. And it's like, oh, come on. They suborned men, which said, we have heard him speak blasphemous words. Why is this thing of blasphemy come up over and over again in these stories? It was actually the concept of the day in those days. It was against the law. This was worthy of death. Blasphemy was one of the things that a Jewish person could use against someone else and have them killed. Especially the religious people could have the common people put to death if they were blasphemous. So they said, we have heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and against God. Let's continue on, verse 12. Then, and they stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes that came upon him and caught him and brought him to the council. Remember, this is Stephen we're talking about. So they grabbed Stephen, they brought him out here, and they said, yeah, and remember, they rehearsed this with these men. These religious leaders rehearsed this with these men. They said, now look, you've heard him say that, right? You've heard him say these things, right? You know, I think you probably heard him say this sometime. What was he saying exactly? Look at verse 13. Let's continue on. They set up false witnesses which said, this man ceases not to speak blasphemous words against this holy place and the law. Watch verse 14. For we have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place and shall change the customs which Moses delivered us. Now, let's take a time out. So, they said, look, you heard him say something about, you know, he's going to destroy this temple, right? You heard him say that, didn't you? I mean, you heard him say that, didn't you? Would you testify to that? You know, so what's happening here? And by the way, and change the customs which Moses delivered to us? Did Jesus do any of that? Yeah, he kind of did. He did. He said, a new commandment I give unto you. Not number 614. That's what they thought. He said, no, I'm going to give you a new commandment. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. He said, on those two things hang all the prophets. In other words, all the customs that Moses delivered to you, they all hang on those two things. Get those two things right, and you'll be fine. I mean, after all, there's no need to have a law that says thou shalt not murder. If you love people, you don't murder them. Right? If you love your wife, you don't do these kind of things to your wife. If you love your neighbor, you don't do these kind of things. So that's basically what it said. So what were these guys doing now? These two witnesses, they're a little different than the last two, right? I mean, these two guys back in Ahab's day, they were just liars. But these guys are sort of being manipulated, aren't they? You had this crowd, you had these group that had something against Stephen. These guys probably didn't really have anything against Stephen. So they went out and they found some people that, you remember him saying something about that? Do you remember that? Let me tell you what he said and you tell me if you remember. Wait, does this sound like things that happen on Facebook and Instagram and locker rooms, high school bathrooms and restaurants and church foyers, Congress, that's a whole different thing. That's a whole different level of crazy. But listen, look, I know we're talking about an old story here, a 2,000-year-old story, and I know we kind of look on a grand scale, but this happens in our lives all the time too, doesn't it? People talk all the time. Hey, you know, I mean, People are manipulated. There's, when somebody has a vendetta against somebody else, there's oftentimes a manipulation of witnesses. Watch, you know, so what we have here is now we have a little bit of truth. So what's really happening here? They're using something that Jesus said that Stephen then preached, and it's true, but they're sort of taking it out of context, aren't they? What was the context of what Jesus, did Jesus ever say, hey, tear down this temple and I'll rebuild it in 3 days? Yeah. He did say that, didn't he? What was he talking about? He's talking about his body. You continue on, he says, but he was referring to his body. So when somebody wants to get two people to help them make a case against somebody else, oftentimes it's taking something that was said in truth, but maybe taking it out of context. Taking something that maybe somebody said about one person and pretending like it was said about this person. You see what I'm saying? This is human nature. Like being in junior high again, isn't it? Except we don't really ever grow up. Some of us more less so than others. But, you know, and so that's what we have here. So we have this concept. I'll give you the third one here, and then we've got to get to these points. So third situation here. Third story. Matthew chapter 26, of course, Jesus is been arrested in the garden. And now he's being brought to the judges. For we have, and they that laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and elders were assembled. But Peter followed them afar off into the high priest's palace, went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council, watch this, they sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death. So their goal was, that look, were they trying to find true witnesses who would say something? Did Jesus say some things that could have gotten him in trouble? Sure he did. That's not what they were going after. So they looked for people who would lie. They looked for people who would be a false witness against Jesus. But they couldn't find them. Verse 60. But they found none. You know, it's pretty hard to find something against a guy who's perfect. It's pretty hard to find something legitimate against a guy who's perfect. Yes? But hey, we're not perfect. And it's not hard to find people who can find things about us, but they found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. They couldn't find. Yet found they none. At last came two false witnesses, and said, "This fellow says I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days." Now, what are these two? What are these two witnesses doing? Say it. Kind of, yeah. I mean, did Jesus say destroy a temple? And he said destroy this temple, right? And I'll rebuild it? But they knew he wasn't talking about that temple. And rebuild it in 3 days. Of course, he was talking about his body. And so again, this is what we have. So what we have, this mixing of truth. We have this mixing of something that would lead any reasonable person to believe that it's probably true, even though I know it's not. Are you with me? This is what lawyers do, right? Lawyers are wordsmiths. And they will phrase something and say, it's their job, it's what they get paid for, to phrase things and say things in such a way so that they're much more believable. And so that's what's happening here. And so we have this story. Now, obviously, this is talking about Jesus. So basically, they just sort of kept looking until they found somebody who would do what they asked them to do. Do you see that in here? They just kept looking. They couldn't find him at first. They just kept looking. Now, can I ask you a question? What should have happened? Remember when we read this just a second ago? The accusers of Jesus, when they brought the first two witnesses in and set them in front of Caiaphas, and they were proven to be liars, what should have happened? Say it again. Dismissed Jesus. What else should have happened? They should have turned the attention from Jesus, the accused, to the people who recruited liars. Yes? And again, I know we talked about this. So that's part of the problem. Part of the problem, and the reason that there's so much loose talk, the reason that people are so quick and so easy to gossip and to slander about each other, is because there's never any accountability. Now, we would love to have seen them do that here, yes? But by that same token, then that means we need to do that. When somebody tries to bring you in, and I'm leaning in here as far as I can. When somebody tries to bring you into their vendetta against somebody, and you realize, hey, this is a lie, this is not true, this is not right, as soon as that happens, first of all, that ought to shut that whole thing down. And secondly, there ought to be accountability. We should be courageous enough to say, you know what? I think that we ought to go ahead and bring everybody in here and you say that in front of the person you're saying it about. That's hard for us, isn't it? That's hard for us. But that's justice. That's what we're talking about here. So what we're seeing here, that's what happened in Jesus' situation. So what do all three of these have in common? Two witnesses. Each one of them had two witnesses, yes? Each one of them was an innocent person. Now, let me give you this. So false witnesses, though, are of two kinds. False witnesses are of two kinds. The first example we saw back in the days of Ahab, they were liars. And maybe some this as well. But the second kind of false witness is somebody who's mistaken. Somebody who's mistaken. You know, it's like we were kind of playing around here. You know, if you had thought that I smacked Tom, you went out and told somebody that. And you just told what you saw. What are you? False witness. Thank you, Bucky. False witness. Condemning an innocent person. And I think, and again, it's an extreme example, but this is what happens a lot of times when stories get repeated. When we repeat something that we've heard, when somebody says one thing and we tell somebody, we've got to be so careful about it. This is how serious God thinks. This is what happened to Jesus. You follow me? This is what happened to Jesus. People's reputations get destroyed in situations like this. And by the way, in a case like this, when they bring out false witnesses and they're not believed, they're found out to be liars, they're dismissed, you bring out two more. They're also found to be liars. You get rid of them, you bring out two more. So tell me, is this what happens after that happens and that happens and that happens over and over and over again? After a while, the whole world then says, oh, well, he must be innocent. Is that how it works? No, you just... The same story gets told over and over and over until the truth no longer matters. And people's reputations are destroyed in some cases. Again, we see this on a grand scale. We see this with these Supreme Court justices and people like that. But they're no more important than the teenage girls that Gabby goes to school with. She doesn't go to school? Did you get kicked out again? You got expelled again? Oh my goodness. Was it guns again? No, I'm just kidding. but you know what I'm saying? Look, it doesn't matter if it's a 5-year-old on a playground or if it's a 55-year-old at work. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's somebody you know, somebody you don't know. God said, I want my people to be different. I want my people to treat each other properly. Treat each other the way that I say to treat them with justice. So let's go back very, very quickly here, and I'm not going to get through everything probably, but let's go back very quickly. Go back to 2 Corinthians 13. So what was Paul saying in 2 Corinthians 13 and 1? He said, this is the third time I'm coming to you. Do you hear, doesn't he sound like a mom calling from the kitchen? You know, he said, look, this is the third time I'm having to come to you. It sounds like if I have to come in there, you know, if I have to say this one more time, that's what it sounds like, right? He's obviously frustrated. He's frustrated with something. Something is getting him to the point where he said, look, this is the third time I'm having to say this to you. In the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every word be established. What was he dealing with that got him so frustrated where he had to remind them, hey, you cannot behave this way. You got to have at least two or three people to even begin to look at something Well, we go back a few chapters. Remember, you and I have a Bible that's broken into chapters and verses, but he didn't have that. He just wrote a letter. So let's go back to chapter 12 and verse number 20. What was going on that got him so upset in the church? He said, "For I fear lest when I come, I shall not find you such as I would." In other words, I'm not going to like what I see. "And that I shall be found unto you as you would not." You're not going to like the way I respond, is what he's saying. He said, there's debates, envyings, wraths, strifes, backbitings, whisperings, swellings, tumults. What's he upset about? He's upset about how they're treating each other, yes? He's upset about how they're talking about each other, whisperings. We talked about that weeks ago, didn't we? Same word that we use as gossip. He said you're whispering about each other. You're backbiting. You're having your little private meetings. And he said, look, this is not right. And that's when he went into then, he said, this is the third time I'm having to deal with this. So Paul's getting a little frustrated, isn't he? He's getting a little frustrated with this kind of thing continuing to go on in the church. He's trying to instruct the church, and look, and he's already dealt with this church on a lot. If you read 1 Corinthians, you'll find there's all kinds of stuff going on in that church he dealt with the first time, and they got it all fixed. And he commended them. Here's the point. He commended them at the beginning of this letter because they got rid of all the sexual kind of sins, all the morality kind of stuff, all the things that we think are the really bad things. Are you with me? He said, you fixed all that. You fixed all those easy sins, those ones that are easy to see. He said, you fixed all that stuff that most people would call sin. But he said, before I close my, this is the last, the 13 is the last chapter. Before I close this letter, he said, but here's the problem I've got. You still got this kind of stuff going on. He said, you're backbiting and whispering and all this kind of stuff. So obviously, hello, come on in. He was pretty serious about it. And so that's what led him to say, look, you've got to have at least two people before you even deal with stuff. And I think that means he was just not wanting to have this kind of talk going on in the church. So very, very quickly now, for those of you that are filling out your paper, let me help you finish that up. I wanted you to see these three stories, and I wanted us to try to relate this more to our lives. So what do we do? So what do we do when somebody comes and they want to talk to you. They want to talk to you about somebody. Here's the questions. This is just my opinion. Here's what I would do. Number one, ask yourself, is it even something you should hear? So here's how we know that. Are you the authority? Are you the authority? This is the question you ask yourself. Hey, am I the authority who can do something about this? Oh, that's you, Mark. Good to see. Is this something that I can do something about? Hey, if you're not the authority, they shouldn't even be talking to you, yes? If it's two employees talking with each other, no, go talk to the boss. That's who your issue is with. Go talk to the boss and so forth. You get that? So are you the authority? Can you be of any help? Number two, is the witness a just witness? That means that were they an eyewitness or are they asking for a friend kind of thing? Do they have a reputation for telling the truth? What's the motive? Is the motive love or anger? Is the motive help or revenge? How many just witnesses are there? And number four, if it's investigated, what does the accused say? We have a tendency to skip over the one thing that's the most important. Go to the accused. I said, go to the accused. When somebody, you want to know if somebody did something, if somebody wants to talk to you about something so-and-so did at work, so-and-so did in the family, at Thanksgiving, whatever it is, go talk to that person and ask them what they say. Ask them whether or not that's what happened. And I think I'm just going to go ahead and stop right there because I think that's where we need to stop. Well, for those of you who want to finish your paper, all right, justice following judgment. All right, after this is all done, after the judgment's been done, don't publicize it. Nobody else needs to know. Hey, don't publicize it. Nobody needs to know. Nobody needs to know except the people involved. Bring balance to the situation, and when the scale is balanced, the matter is over.